The fact that both gold and silver are rising so fast, it's because the panic is at all-time highs. But there's clearly a disconnect between those that have money in this world today and, you know, like the Gen Z and millennials.
What we talked about happening, it's starting to play out right now. And I think we'll see all kinds of different methods of control from the top down.
It makes me wonder, as we look at Venezuela, Greenland, everything else playing out, to what extent some of these events are orchestrated.
People are waking up to this now, like, oh, it's just happening. Like, no, this has been happening for a long time, and now it's just really starting to exponentially speed up. So it's time to wake up.
I personally don't really care what the political future is going to be like, because as long as I own my time and energy, I can decide what my future is going to look like. And that option is available to anyone who wants to take it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Greer and Tony are here as always, and we've got our friend Brandon Gentile joining. Brandon, thank you. Guys, we've got some crazy news. So the markets are going nuts right now. I've got two tweets to share with you. So first, from No Limit Gains, he says, this is an emergency. Gold and silver are at all-time highs, and the S&P is rising with gold. This has never happened before. Unfortunately, he says, the only asset lagging behind is Bitcoin. It's as if people have forgotten it even exists. But this isn't just a standard sector rotation, because if it were, stocks would be crashing too. This is the result of excessive money printing, not just in the US, but across the world. And he gives you an idea of M2 growth rates. And then separately, Health Ranger on X here shares that silver surged past 96, gold's headed for 5,000. He said, the shocking thing is this is probably still early in the run-up here, since US currency printing is obviously headed for a hyperinflationary blowout. It's a mathematical fact that gold will hit 10K, silver will hit 250 as the dollar dies. Those who hold dollars will be utterly wiped out. Those who hold metals, and I would add Bitcoin, will be the owners of lasting wealth. All righty, guys. So it looks like this dollar collapse that we have been talking about might actually be here. It might be imminent. Tony, I would love your take first, and let's bat this around.
Yeah, man, this is the immediate news. Like the fact that both gold and silver are rising so fast, it's because the panic is at all-time highs. But there's clearly a disconnect between those that have money in this world today and, you know, like the Gen Z and millennials. Those people that are buying gold and silver are buying it because, again, it's all they know, right? And it's like their immediate safety net. And they're ignoring Bitcoin, not because it's a bad, you know, it's a bad bet, but because they don't know anything about it. And now, you know, it's not the time to start learning. They need something like pronto, and this is where they're going. But, you know, like the younger crowd, they're not buying gold and silver. I mean, they're not, realistically, they're not buying anything, because, you know, the fact that their savings are pretty much non-existent is really what's worrisome. But the fact that so much money is skyrocketing into these precious metals tells you that there's something really, really bad, very imminent. And so that's what worries me. It's like at some point, Bitcoin is going to take over this, because, of course, you know, precious metals have no room in a digital world. It's as simple as that. I mean, you can't do much with it. You can't scale with it. You can't pay anyone with it. You can't travel with it. It's just like people are just throwing their money in it because they just need somewhere to put it because of, you know, what's clearly coming their way.
Brandon, what do you think about all this? Do you feel like this is happening at an accelerated pace, and this is a signal that people who hold dollars ought to be paying attention to?
Yeah, you better be running for your life. I mean, it took 200 years for the debt to get to whatever it was, $1 trillion. And now we've done, you know, whatever the math is, $5 trillion. And now we're at almost $40 trillion in the last 15, 20 years, you know, so my math might be off a little bit, but we can all see the visuals of the hockey stick curve and the interest. We keep having to pay more interest. We're at that point. Now, at what point does someone call our bluff or we lose confidence? I think Tony or one of you guys mentioned hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is the printing of the currency going exponential, but it's really the loss of confidence in the dollar itself. We've never had social media in a place where the world reserve currency, these things are happening and we can share news. I mean, everyone remembers the GameStop AMC stuff and the short squeeze. That was just a bunch of, you know, Yahoos online trying to, you know, blow stuff up. Just imagine when people can figure out the dollar is at, a short squeeze on the dollar. And that is coming. These things are going to keep happening. And because of social media, it's only going to happen even more. So I think that it's harder for it to take effect because it's a world reserve currency, because there's 13 aircraft carriers, you know, people, it's hard to call America's bluff, but we're seeing it. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. This is what 15, 20 years in the making, like I just said,
Mike Maloney, who I started in the gold and silver world in really studying 15, 20 years ago, he's been tracking the death in the dollar coffin for 15, 20 years. And going through the BRICS was starting then, like all these things were happening and people starting to stop their treasury purchases. So this people are waking up to this now, like, oh, it's just happening. Like, no, this has been happening for a long time. And now it's just really starting to exponentially speed up. So it's time to wake up.
You raise an interesting point that this is the first time that this would have happened in the age of social media. So it makes me wonder, I haven't thought about this. Are we going to see controls on social media like we've never seen before in order to prevent the panic from spreading? I'll open that question up to anyone.
100%, man. 100%. Why do you think other countries are pushing this digital ID and providing identification to use a search engine? It's crisis control. And so for sure, it's going to get worse.
Yeah, and they know exactly how this is going to play out, which is why you see the government rushing into stablecoins. They have to have a replacement when the dollar collapses. This won't be a surprise to them, you know, as they see everyone rushing to the lifeboats, gold, silver, and of course, Bitcoin's lagging right now. But history shows that Bitcoin pushes faster and harder once it does catch up. So I think that anyone holding Bitcoin is going to be in a much better position, not just because of that, but it's also digital. But yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we'll see capital controls. You won't be able to withdraw from the bank. Your 401k and your stocks, those are all still going to be denominated in dollars, which are hyperinflating. So I think what we talked about happening, it's starting to play out right now. And I think we'll see all kinds of different methods of control from the top down.
So we'll all be rich and own nothing.
Yeah,
I think it's
really important too. Just to, again, like going back into history is super important. I know no one does that. No one has time to do that anymore because of fiat. We're all in the hamster wheel. But this takes time. But also, like you look at the rates on, you know, what is the government doing? You have a conservative president, and he is, whether he believes it or not, he's forced in essence, just like Nixon, to take us off the gold standard. He's forced to try to cap interest rates on credit cards. He's in there buying bonds in the housing market, buying companies, you know, like or in Intel, we're in Palantir. Like this is, you know, this goes back to Obamacare and government going, hey, we're going full socialized medicine. We're doing all these things. If you zoomed out and brought someone in from an alien life form or alien planet, that you'd say, hey, what kind of system do they have? It wouldn't be capitalism. I'll tell you that right now. So this is where you have to zoom out and say, hey, where are we in this story? And we're at the end of the fourth turning chapter book here.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, as we look at Venezuela, Greenland, everything else playing out, to what extent some of these events are orchestrated in order to address the fact that they believe there's an imminent dollar collapse versus Trump's just kind of a wild guy. And like the fact that he has imperialistic tendencies also doesn't surprise me. And is it maybe just, hey, natural resources, my buddies get to build the Freedom City in Greenland or whatever, you know, hand some special favors back to the people who got me elected. I don't know. I don't know if you guys like tie any of these events together or if, you know, some of it's just, you know, crazy people doing crazy things.
I don't think we,
man, the thing is, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. You know, I mean, we'll never know all the details and the complete truth behind all of this. But what's worrisome in this specific situation is that for the first time ever, people in the West are going to experience something that, you know, historically they've always read about happening in other places. You know, like the collapses, the hyperinflation, you know, the chaos, that's coming home now. This is what I think is most terrifying, because most people who've been sheltered their entire life have no idea how to, first of all, receive this news, let alone live in this new reality, because now it's here. It's no longer somewhere else. And so I don't know how this is going to play out, man.
I think we're seeing Americans get used to a lower standard of living. You know, we're seeing record credit card debt. And that just means that people are trying to extend the way they live without having the cash to fund it. So we're all getting pinched, you know, whenever we buy things. And I think that's what you're saying, Tony, is absolutely right. We thought, you know, hey, in America, we're different, we're special. But I think we're watching people get used to the idea that no matter how much effort they put in, they're not getting paid more at work. They're getting replaced by technology or other countries taking the roles. And we are really getting used to living in a much lower standard of living than what we expected as we were growing up.
Yeah. I'm reading an interesting book right now called The History of Central Banking. And it was one that Simon Dixon shared in an interview he did or something. And if you look, you have to look back very far into history. I mean, like the turn of the 20th century from the 19th into the 20th century, Russia was, by this author's, you know, recount of history, like at the peak of civilization. I mean, workers were working few hours, everyone had abundance, all of these things. And he talked about how it was actually state-controlled central bank instead of privately controlled central bank, where there was, you know, tons of usury and the special interests involved in that. And obviously, after the private central bankers, I won't name the family, but I think you all know it starts with an R. They basically came in and said, this is the one place where we don't have control. We want to, you know, basically monopolize the banking industry in Russia. And very shortly thereafter, Russia, you know, effectively collapsed. That's, I mean, a huge catalyst for World War One. And I think those sorts of events are things that we in the West cannot even fathom. But history is littered with examples of that very thing taking place for a variety of reasons, whether it's central banks, whether it's war, whether it's just government mismanagement of the money, which is, I think, what we're seeing today. Any other comments on Clown World and
I think this is the most fascinating thing. I mean, we could spend the entire time just on this, obviously. I mean, but I think, and again, right, wrong, or indifferent from my chair, you know, seeing what I've seen and knowing what I know, you know, about Donald Trump. I mean, art of the deal, all the things he's done. Again, you cannot like the guy, whatever. He doesn't bluff. He tells you, he telegraphs the things he's going to do. And this is, and the people act like, oh, I don't know what's going on. Oh, like it was so crazy. The rules-based order and all this stuff. From my vantage point, it looks like you have the globus. I mean, it's playing out in the West right now. I mean, Howard Lutnick over there saying, hey, America's getting screwed. It's not happening anymore. These guys are going over there basically in their face saying, hey, it looks like a globalist order. They're trying to collapse the world into you own nothing. You're going to be happy, like you said earlier. And we're going to be in this AI panopticon. And it seems like the Trump side is like, we're not doing that. It's going to be this fractured kind of world where America's going to get theirs. We're going to protect ourselves and come hell or high water. I don't care. I don't care what anyone says. And it's going to be this fractured, you know, order. And it's going to be built on this new, you know, the chips and, you know, Bitcoin, eventually all these different things. That's what it looks like to me. And he's just like, I don't care. So I would love your guys' thoughts on that. But that to me is what it looks like.
If that's true, I think that would be a big win for America. You know, as I mentioned a minute ago, I think we're seeing the quality of life deteriorate. But what you're describing is, you know, the board game got flipped over. Trump's taking as much of the pieces as he can. Yep. And he's doing it just to protect America and our entire hemisphere. You know, that I think that's interesting. And I haven't given that too much thought, but I would say if that's true, then maybe the calls for collapse look totally different. Maybe it's not quite a collapse, but it's more of a reordering. Also, when you think about what they're building, I mean, they are building the surveillance state. They are doing digital IDs. They're going to have digital voter ID. We're going to have stable coins and CBDCs. So even if a future was to be built as more America first, I think the AI panopticon is still rising. So it's kind of hard to take both of those at face value and say they're going to be blended in some way.
And what about 3 years from now, Greer? Right? Like, I mean, Trump's gone. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't care either way about Donald Trump, so I'm not going to sit here and pine for him. But like, the point is, he'll be gone in 3 years. We might have Gavin Newsom. So we're going to go right back. The pendulum thing right back.
Will he be gone? I wonder about that myself.
Yeah, honestly, I appreciate the optimism. I don't tend to feel that way about Trump. I don't think he's capable of 4D chess. I don't know if he's capable of checkers at this point. Yeah. But I think the kicker is, let's say in a best case scenario for the United States, and this does not apply globally, obviously, that Trump is operating in our best interest. He is playing 4D chess. This all works out, you know, over the next few years. Is he going to have the midterm elections? Is the next president going to be able to, because this doesn't, none of this stuff gets resolved in a presidential term. Mm-hmm. And we're already a fourth of the way through his. And so if we end up with a Gavin Newsom who feels we need to go a completely different direction, even if I'm optimistic about Trump, which I'm personally not, we just get reset again three years from now. And I think I suspect, Tony, if I were to just imagine what you're thinking, it's, you guys are, what are you smoking? This is going to end very badly, and it's not going to be this utopian U.S., you know, America first movement.
No, what I'm thinking is much simpler than this. I mean, you guys are like us, seem to be running around in circles. And it really doesn't matter what the future holds politically. You can opt out of this entire system, because what you don't want to do is remain dependent on the variables that these crazy people control, which is the money. Once you own your money, you own your life. The control is in your hands. You don't like what's happening in the United States? No problem. Pack your suitcase, get out, go somewhere else. Not everywhere is doom and gloom. There's a lot of places around the world that are, you know, embracing the future, that are not going, you know, completely tyrannical and dystopian. So, but people that are going to be, you know, in that privileged position are those that actually control the assets that allow them to pay for that lifestyle. And it's not while remaining on that same fiat chessboard. You have got to forget about that entirely, which is why I think the precious metal bugs are going to have a brutal, brutal wake-up reality check in the not-so-distant future, because all that, you know, emergency psychological safety net that they're going with right now has very little use in a digital world. And that's going to become abundantly apparent if one day they decide to pack up and leave, right? And besides, most of these gold bugs don't even have the physical gold. So they don't control it. They don't even know if it's real. Like, there's so many like avenues you can take this in. But, you know, at the end of the day, go to where the puck is headed, and it's nothing physical. So I personally don't really care what the political future is going to be like, because as long as I own my time and energy, I can decide what my future is going to look like. And that option is available to anyone who wants to take it.
I think that's a good mic drop moment. Let's move on to the next couple of stories here, guys. Alrighty, so Greer, you tweeted, you said, "Oh shit, Jack did it. We're going to win." So this is in response to a documenting Bitcoin story that local businesses in Las Vegas are beginning to accept Bitcoin payments following a national trend showing it gaining traction among merchants, cutting costs and attracting customers. So this guy is, he owns Bouncy World out in Las Vegas. And the more obscure and normal the business, it makes me more bullish. So Greer, you shared this one. Why don't you give your thoughts first?
Yeah, you said it. Bouncy World now accepts Bitcoin. And the owner talked about how he's able to save on fees. So if you haven't bought Bitcoin, you've been front run by, you know, just about everybody. So, you know, stop waiting around. I mean, if Bouncy World's taking it, to me, this means that every business owner who's looking at margins, trying to cut costs and pass on the same value to their customers, you know, Bitcoin's the obvious answer. You know, Square has enabled it, and I credit Jack for putting this in place, but Square has enabled any business to be able to accept Bitcoin. So, you know, get ready. It's going to be normalized. Everyone's going to have Bitcoin on any type of wallet and app. You're going to have hot wallets like we do today. And of course, the large portion of your stack should be in self-custody. But I think Bitcoin is money. And the more Bitcoiners use it as money, spend and replace, you know, what does it cost to go to Bouncy World? $12, $15? Easy to spend and replace that amount. So yeah, this is fantastic news. You know, a bright shining light coming out of here from Bouncy World.
Yeah, so keep in mind, many of you listening are being front run as we speak by a guy who owns an indoor inflatable amusement park for children in Las Vegas, Nevada. Tony, I know you get excited about this stuff. What's your take?
This is the signal, guys. I mean, these are the headlines that people should be paying attention to, and these are the exact headlines that are being muddled or hidden completely, because of course those shine light on what's actually happening. As you guys said, Bitcoin is money. And, you know, there are thousands of merchants that are adopting it every single day. And it's not going to stop, because the incentives, you know, completely destroy that of the fiat system. It's faster, it's cheaper, there's no permission, there's less red tape. Like, why wouldn't you adopt something that makes your life a lot easier? And there's a lot of merchants, you know, that are, you know, actively doing so. And the more these tools, like, you know, that Square, that Cash App, mature and make the whole process a lot easier for normies to get into Bitcoin, well, you know, this thing is just going to accelerate, which is why I am like retardedly bullish on a Bitcoin future, I know in my head it's 100% going to be the future of money and the world's neutral reserve currency.
So do you guys think that in Las Vegas, then there's a day where you can't take dollar bills to the gentleman's club? You take like an open dime or something? Is that the way of the future?
Yeah.
Why not?
Definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
Hey, so real quick, Brandon, I want your thoughts, but I also want to chime in with one more sort of way this is going mainstream. So starting March 1st, Steak and Shake, this is so cool. They're giving all hourly employees at company-operated restaurants a Bitcoin bonus of 21 cents for every hour worked, so paid in Bitcoin. They're using Fold app to assist with this. And I think we talked about this on a pre-recorded episode we did that'll come out soon. Adam Semeca, our friend, did the math, and he said, if you just worked for 30 years at Steak and Shake, you worked 40-hour weeks, you never got a raise, you just saved that 21 cents per hour in Bitcoin, after 30 years, you'd have $3 million worth of Bitcoin. I haven't double-checked him. I'm just going to assume that's right. But for a lot of people, this looks silly. And then when you do the math and assume, I think that's a conservative 20% CAGR, you've got a legitimate stack after 30 years. So you can weigh in, Brandon, on either or both stories here.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is phenomenal. And this is a signal, like Tony said, and the guy said, because it feels like one of the first shoes to drop in the sense of like out in the open world, the free world, right? Where like Jack is building something and you have these people that are just everyday people being like, hey, like I'm going to do this because the incentives are there. Like you have to build the world. You can't fix reality from the current system, right? So we have to keep building this new world. So people, if you build it, they will come, right? From Field of Dreams. And this is where people, and it takes time, because we talked about this earlier too, that the young generation, going back to the Steak and Shake thing, where you have as a business, you have incentives because there's no fees, it's final settlement, people can't do chargebacks. And then from the saver side, from the Steak and Shake side, the young people in I do believe the reason Bitcoin hasn't caught on even faster, and it's already been pretty fast, it's only been 17 years, but the younger generation, like you guys mentioned, doesn't have much money. I think it's what, the millennials have the same, at the same time, the boomers, the same age, the boomers have like 20% of the nation's wealth, and now the millennials have like 4% or 5% or something like that. So the younger generation can't save as well because they're saving in dollars. Now, you're going to start seeing this play out over the months and years of this stuff happening and people seeing that because of the social media and the ability to spread and talk to one another like we talked about earlier. So this is going to play out. Then you mix it with the next epoch or two of Bitcoin. And I talked about this with, I think, the Club Orange guys the other day, Brian Dement and Matteo Pellegrini. And we were just talking about how the early cypherpunks, a lot of them hit the lottery or they lost their coins. And like, so a lot of them kind of like went off and did their own thing and, you know, whatever. You have Jack Dorsey, some of these couple guys have built some things, but just think about this next generation or two of Bitcoiners who a lot of people will have to probably work still, or they'll want to work, they'll want to build businesses. They won't have billions of dollars, I guess, what we look at in today's wealth, but they're going to be wealthy, but they're going to be putting capital back into the system and building things like this. And this is what we're going into, and it's hard to see because we're in it right now. So this world between savers and young people seeing what happens when you save in Bitcoin, and then business owners seeing there's no chargebacks, final settlement, and then also Bitcoin holders that now have more and more purchasing power are going to want to put back into the system, build businesses, go in. You know, all this is coming together, but it's going to take a few more years. And you mix that with the hyperinflationary, you know, the dollar, the old world, like we just were going bantering back and forth about. That is all coming together in this next 5 or 10 years, and it's going to be beautiful stuff, guys.
I completely agree. I think this is what's inspiring about the Steak and Shake story in particular, is that this is a relatively small cost to this company. And it's just a very simple way for them to demonstrate you can get creative about how you benefit employees, and Bitcoin can be a piece of that. I think there are going to be a lot of, because in many people working at Steak and Shake, they don't want to work there for 30 years. I get that. There are some people who simply don't have and won't develop the skills to probably leave an occupation like that. And so they're going to stick around for a while, and they're going to benefit disproportionately compared to anyone else working at any other fast food chain for minimum wage or whatever it is. And it's just cool to see. And no one asked them to do this. They just said, hey, we're going to, you know, continue this. We're going to continue to like orange pill our employees and do what we can to accept Bitcoin and operate on a Bitcoin standard. I think Steak and Shake is, compared to all of the other quote unquote treasury cos, is knocking it out of the park in terms of how they've approached this so far.
What's cool is that if Adam's math is correct, you know, 21 cents an hour gets you 3 million after 30 years. You can work anywhere you want, save a dollar an hour for, and you could retire in 6 years or 5 years. So it's really about saving a little bit of Bitcoin repeatedly, consistency, you know. And I think for me, that's the other win here. It demonstrates that even a little bit of Bitcoin purchased regularly is going to be meaningful in a short amount of time. I mean, not short like 2 days, but, you know, 5, 6, 10 years, that'll be significant.
Yeah. The key is, as you stack, as you accumulate, you have to take yourself on an educational journey so you aren't tempted to sell before the dollar collapse and get into some sort of dollar-denominated asset instead.
Tony, the thing is, if Adam's numbers are correct, it makes me think we need to revise ours at the Bitcoin way. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, you know, if a business wants to show, you know, the people that, you know, work at that company how much, you know, they love, value, and respect them, you know, the best way to do this is to pay them with the best money humanity has ever known, and that is Bitcoin. And so I think ultimately, you know, people will upgrade, you know, the money that they save in over time as things get worse. Like, for example, back in Lebanon, nobody's saved, or very few people are saving in that local shitcoin. Their next best thing is, I guess, the dollar. And then once that, you know, meets its Lebanon moment, then the next best thing may be, I don't know, some form of crypto, maybe, who knows. And then maybe after that, they'll ultimately find their way to the king of all money, the ruler of all currency, which is Bitcoin. But people have to get to that, you know, like their own way. But I think as things get progressively worse, you know, the distance to getting to Bitcoin and finally understanding that that is the only final destination you want to be is going to become much shorter, right? So this is bullish times, man. I mean, it's sad that people have to go through pain in order to, you know, get to that. But, you know, this is the world we live in.
I agree. And Tony, I think you hit on an important point. And gents, keep in mind, Valentine's Day is less than a month away. There's no better way to tell the people you love them in your life than to give them some Bitcoin, show them how to take self-custody.
Buy them an orange rose.
An orange rose. All righty, guys, let's do these last two quickly. We're running low on time. So just in from Cointelegraph, a solo Bitcoin miner has successfully mined a block, earning 3.13 Bitcoin worth about $289,000. If you're not solo mining on some level right now and you've got 100, 200 bucks to spend on a miner, you're just missing out. This is just a beautiful lottery. You get to play every 10 minutes, have fun, learn some things.
Kudos to the winner, man. Kudos to the winner.
Totally. I'm so jealous.
It was Greer.
Yeah.
Did Greer not tell you?
No.
Was that you, Greer?
No, that wasn't me. Goodness. I look at my stats every day. I'm just waiting to wake up and see a notification on my phone that I've hit a block. Yes. I'm so jealous.
We'll know Greer won a block because he will not show up to Bitcoin Banter.
That's true. I won't. That's how you'll know.
Brandon, what's your take on solo mining? I don't think we've talked about this with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is kind of like one of the great stories to kind of wrap this show with, because we've hit so much. We've hit the political stuff, the business angle, the young kids saving and building a system outside. You know, I do believe the lifeboat off the Titanic is I've used that analogy 1,000 times. There's so many ways you can take it. And this is one of those things. It's the same thing. Like, here's people, you're mining, you're kind of building extra lifeboats off the Titanic. So yeah, you have some available, but then we're building, you know, this is what mining is. You are actively building and nurturing and securing the system off of the Titanic, these lifeboats. The thing is going down, the US dollar network is going down as we've outlined. And here we are, someone that, and again, I think this is the beauty, the last thing I'll say about it, so I'll let you guys answer, is the Satoshi marrying digital scarcity to physical energy, right? And I think that that's something that doesn't get talked about enough either. And it's through time. It's not, hey, how much power do I have? If I have 1 billion miners and nation state wins, here we are right here. Just get in the game. It's secured to time. It's the amount of minutes in time, not the amount of wattage or power you have out there. So it is a true lottery, and that's what really democratizes it. And it really doesn't get a lot of airtime. And this is the great example of it right here.
Yeah. Greer, I know you've got an addiction. How many miners you got running these days?
I have two. I have about 14 terahash at home. Cost me, I don't know, $15, $20 a month. And I'm just waiting to hit that block. I just personally, I want to hit one before we get to 1 million blocks. I think it would be cool to be able to say I hit one of the first 1 million blocks in Bitcoin.
That's cool.
You better start stacking some more miners along with your sats, man.
I know. Power's expensive.
14, 15. Yeah, that's fair. Tony, why don't you take a more serious approach? Why should people be mining Bitcoin on their own?
Well, simply because, first of all, the cost of entry to SoloMine is going down drastically. And I mean, more and more of these products are becoming plug-and-play appliances in your everyday home, right? Like things that you need, like whether shower heaters, pool heaters, things of that sort. And we're going to continuously see this. So why just waste money when you can, you know, use the same equipment to potentially make money at the same time? And when you route this via your own node, I mean, you're contributing to the whole decentralization of the mining universe here. And so every Bitcoiner, every serious Bitcoiner should seriously consider this. And it's not expensive, or at least it's not anywhere near as expensive as it used to be. And the prices continuously go down. And who knows, man, you just might wake up like this lucky fellow here and hit a block, and congratulations. The chances are low, but you know, it's not as low as people think. They're much better odds than playing the traditional lottery when you solo mine. And like you guys said, it's extremely addictive. I mean, you'll start off with one miner, and before you know it, you have a collection of like 17.
Love it, man. All righty. Hey, guys, we got one more. Tony, I'm just going to let you take this. This is more of a public service announcement. So our friend Martin from BTC Prague warned sophisticated phishing attacks on crypto. So high-level attacks, basically, I'll just briefly describe the attack vector. So an attacker will initiate a team or Zoom call, use deepfake AI video to look like your friend, claim audio issues, and ask you to download a plugin in order to access a conversation with them. And then the plugin provides access to your system, and they can steal all of your information, your Bitcoin, whatever it is. So, Tony, why don't you just give a very broad warning and a call to vigilance?
Yeah, guys, this just highlights what we've been saying all along, that the sophistication of these attacks is going to continuously improve now that the tools are readily available to everybody. And it can happen to anyone. So don't just assume this happens to newbies. It can happen to experts. It can happen to professionals. It can happen to anyone who's simply not paying attention at the right time. And usually the biggest giveaways of these scams is that urgency. Like, they want you to act now. They want you to usually download something or install something. These are the first like immediate dead giveaways. So whenever you see something like this, just pause before reacting. There's no urgency that'll land out of nowhere, right? Like, unless you specifically know that something's broken in your your life, there's no need to immediately react. Pause, ask, just don't rush into doing anything drastic, because that's how most people end up regretting it, 10 seconds after they do whatever it is that they're instructed to do. So I'm glad this story ended on a good note, but, it's just more awareness needs to be put out there. More people need to level up their IT skills, so to speak, just so that they don't become victims of something as devious as this.
Yeah. Set a reminder every hour on your phone where it just says, don't trust, verify, because these deepfakes are getting incredibly convincing. And I think it's important that you just stop, you get confirmation from whoever it is you think you're talking to, because it truly might not be them. Very scary. But again, there are ways you can mitigate these risks and just be safe. Alrighty, guys, thank you so much. Brandon, thanks for coming on, man. Why don't you give people a handoff, tell them where they can find you, your podcast, anything else?
Yeah, this is always amazing, boys. Brandon _ Gentile is my first and last name, with the underscore in between, for the handle on our podcast on YouTube, Spotify, whatever, Noster, Twitter, everything. So I appreciate you guys. Look forward to the next one.
Yeah, no, of course. We'll have you back soon. And for everyone listening, stick around for another minute, learn a bit about the Bitcoin way, how we can help not only with self-custody and some of the other things we talked about, but we can actually help you set up your solo miner. So get started on that if you haven't already. And we look forward to having you back next time. Gents, good chat. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. It was great.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge.
While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want to back up in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.